TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I must say, you're looking and sounding electrified today.
Well, thank you, Chris. You know, I'm on a starship, and I'm singing. I'm on a starship, and I'm singing. Why are we singing, Chris?
That was one of the best things they did throughout this episode, is that every time the music started, they kind of looked around like, oh, where is that coming from, and why is it starting now?
They're like, it's happening again.
Again, please no. All right, everyone. Yes, we're going to be talking about the ninth episode of Strange New World Season 2 today, Subspace Rhapsody. And Matthew, I need to say this before it comes out in the form of a 17th century sea shanty. Here's a quick synopsis of the episode. The discovery of a naturally occurring subspace field leads Spock to speculate that the speed of communications could be tripled. And he was sort of right, at least on a personal level, when his quantum probability field experiment goes wrong and the crew breaks out into song again and again. As the improbability field expands, people on other ships also begin singing. And if the Enterprise crew cannot pull off a grand finale, the phenomenon could spread across the entire subspace communications network, making for some very interesting negotiations with the Gorn. Well, okay, that last part there was not part of this episode, but I suspect that's where we'll be headed in the next one, and so thank goodness they can speak normally again, and they're not going to be singing to lizards.
Let's hope that they are not singing to lizards. That would be great.
Would be a great name for an album, at least, if not a band, however.
Singing to lizards? No, that does sound like actually a pretty cool... I like that. Chris, do you want to start a band?
Oh, sure. Let's start a Dead Milkmen tribute band. That can be like a follow-up to Big Lizard in My Backyard. All right. So, what are your thoughts, Matthew? I have to say, going into this episode, I was very skeptical. I didn't know what to expect. I was a little bit worried about them pulling it off because the shot that they kept using to promote the episode was from the grand finale scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that didn't exactly give me hope. But once this got rolling, all my concern went away pretty quickly. And I thought they put together a very unusual for Star Trek, but very brilliant piece of creative.
Mm-hmm. I think that the biggest part of this, and what I realized, I think, very quickly, is that, you know, this episode, it had nothing to do with the science, and it barely really has anything to do with Star Trek per se.
Mm-hmm.
This really is an episode about trying to figure out a way for all of these characters and all of their stories that have been kind of building throughout the season and even through last season to kind of find a breaking point, and a breakthrough point, right? And so they use this idea of the musical to kind of do that, to allow them to have these characters have their, you know, metaphorical walls broken down, and like any good musical, they break into song. And, you know, I think that was something that, you know, I didn't know necessarily how it would work, but I think because they knew exactly what they wanted to do with the story and why they were doing it, mm-hmm. and I think they made that pretty stinking clear throughout the episode,
mm-hmm.
I think it does work because of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that made for, you know, a really interesting experiment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think biggest part of this is again, you know, like Deep Space Nine, where you would really be kind of taking a moment in the series to tell just a completely character-driven story, that the motivations and the arcs of the characters are really everything that this is about. Mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing that kind of makes this work, too, because mm-hmm. we're not really continuing the Star Trek story in a sense, like, you know, the meta stuff.
Right.
We're just really developing the storylines for these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point of knowing why they're doing it, which is something that I think until we saw it, we didn't know why they were doing it. We thought, exactly. as not just you and me, but I think pretty much all fans felt, okay, they're going to do a musical episode of Strange New Worlds. Are they off their rockers? Like, what's going on? I was joking with our listener, Mark Rodriguez, about next season, and he was throwing out all these storylines to me that would tie into the original series. And I said, don't worry, mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to go to those places. They'll probably get enamored with the idea of doing a claymation episode as one of their 10, and they won't have time to do any of that stuff. And that was before I saw this one, right? And reality is here, they had a very good reason for doing this, and they did make it all about the characters. I sort of feel like they were clearing the deck before they wrap up the season and they take us into season 3. I don't know if I completely feel that way, because I don't think, for example, Spock and Chapel, I don't necessarily think that this is the end of that relationship experiment, but they did establish that she's going to go off. She's going to do this fellowship where she's going to meet Dr. Corby, who we know that she eventually falls in love with and gets engaged to.
Right.
And, you know, 3 months is not really enough time, I think, to fall in love and get engaged to somebody. So this is probably the start of her relationship with Corby. But they establish things like this, and they clear up some of the character lines. They've put La'an and Kirk in a position where I think La'an now has to just make peace with the idea that there could have been something there and move on after Kirk reveals about Carol. And we can assume that Carol Marcus is pregnant with David, because we don't know of them having any other kids. So, you know, all this stuff has, it was interesting to set up an episode in the form of a musical that made everyone think, why are they doing this? And then to use it entirely to accelerate character lines and character relationships in a way that they wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. We've been talking about the difficulty of writing in a 10-episode season, and they kind of found a way here to bypass that and just shift it all into high gear and just blaze through it in a way that let them
right
advance these relationships sort of at warp speed.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways it's a narrative cheat
yeah.
to be able to do this, you mm-hmm. know, because you're forcing characters to have conversations that they haven't been willing to have.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in the end, that's really the whole thematic element of the episode. I mean, the whole episode is driving at this idea of, you know, the mission there was to create faster and better communication throughout mm-hmm. Starfleet and the Quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole episode really is about better communication between everyone, because everyone here, the main storylines we have of Spock and Chapel, La'an and Kirk, and Pike and Batel, they're all kind of having a failure to communicate. I mean, apparently the, you know, Cool Hand Luke problem. Mm-hmm. And because they're not able to communicate effectively with these people that they care about, mm-hmm. the whole episode ends up being about that. I mean, you know, Pelia actually talks about this idea of, you know, when she gives the idea of using music, about fundamental harmonics.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, you know, this episode is about communicating in harmony with one another, mm-hmm. about getting in touch with what we're feeling, being honest, open to share, being our authentic selves instead of hiding ourselves, mm-hmm. and the danger that that creates in our relationships. And even more so, you know, when you look at the macro scale, you know, obviously mm-hmm. communication is called the key. And, you know, you can see how communication breaks down and it creates wars and all this and strife and all this stuff on a large scale. But of course, when we bring that down to the micro level here with all of the relationships we have with the characters, it's creating the same problem. This failure to communicate is hurting all of these relationships in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so by putting us in musical rules, you know, where the moment you feel an emotion strongly, it turns into a song mm-hmm. that you sing what you feel without any reserve, allows those walls to be broken down and for us to actually have the type of communication that people should be having in the first place without having to result to, you know, creating a 17th century pirate shanty ditty, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, communication on the personal level was just so key. And I think that's where, you know, the use of music was so important here. They mentioned real time. If this experiment works, they can create real time communications across thousands of light years, Uhura says. And I think that was a great parallel to what music is, because music provides a sort of instant communication in a way that talking cannot, because the message is straightforward. If you put something into a song, you've sat down and you've, of course, here it's spontaneous, which was quite interesting in the episode, but normally for a songwriter, of course, you've sat down and you've crafted these lyrics. And right. For me, music with words, so musicals or pop or rock or country or whatever, music that has lyrics, and I say that because I'm actually an orchestral musician. I was trained in classical performance, and I was a professional musician for years, and we don't have words, obviously, to orchestral music. But for any other kind of music, for me, the lyrics are the most important part. And I know a lot of people who, they listen to music for the rhythms and the beats and the melodies, the musical melodies, and they don't really care too much about the lyrics. And I'm one of the people who I care intensely about the lyrics. And of course, I like the other parts as well. But if the lyrics to a song aren't good, that song's probably not going to connect with me.
Absolutely.
And
it's interesting you mentioned that, because I'm personally the same way. Mm-hmm. And most of the music that I like tends to accentuate lyrics to songs. Mm-hmm. And my favorite genre of music really is the singer-songwriter, you know, mm-hmm. the person who is, you know, spilling their heart out in a song. And it's the ones to which are writing the things to which I connect to the most that I tend to like their music. You know, I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm like a big John Mayer fan, have been since he began. You know, obviously an entire generation, if not more, of people have connected with somebody like Taylor Swift. They've made an entire career out of sharing their experiences and their feelings in song, which is something that so many other people have felt connected to. So mm-hmm. absolutely, I mean, music is all about that whole idea. And I think that, you know, we'll talk, I think, later just about the songs themselves mm-hmm. and the musical aspect of this. But I think that I really appreciated the idea of us tackling in this episode this idea of communication and us, you know, kind of hiding ourselves from people and not being willing to communicate our full feelings about things. Because obviously it's a terrifying thing to do. Mm-hmm. But this idea of that it is better to tell people the truth about how you're feeling than keep them in the dark. Because in the end, regardless of what it is that you're going to share with somebody, mm-hmm. it's better than being lied to mm-hmm. for too long and then finding out anyway, mm-hmm. right? Because then you're able to deal with the truth mm-hmm. as it is and as it comes, instead of, you know, maybe who knows how long you're kind of living a lie, and then you realize or you find out, oh, everything I thought was true isn't true, right? So you kind of rather know that up front than spending, you know, a lot of time in a place where it's not the case. And so I just love this.
Well, on that note, I think it's great in this episode that they do have a moment where that happens, where in most situations, characters are communicating with one another or they're finding out how the other person feels because a song has suddenly erupted. And in the case of Pike and Vatil, I like that Uhura goes and just turns off the communication channel. She's like, no, we need to just stop this one right now, because Pike and Vatil, they don't know why they're saying these things to each other, because normally they wouldn't open up, Pike's case in particular. But in this episode, we have the moment where La'an actually talks to Kirk and tells Kirk how she feels and what happened without it being in a song. And so I think it really supports what you're saying. And they showed that in the episode that, yes, sometimes you do need to open up and actually tell someone what you need to tell them instead of hiding it. Because when the songs erupt here, that is the case of someone finding out in a way that you didn't intend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it comes down to, you know, speaking of John Mayer, say what you need to say, right? That's his song. And I think that's absolutely the lesson that so many people in this learn. And I think as we kind of talk through some of the different stories, some of the people do it better than others. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would say there's one story in here that I'm actually kind of disgusted with the way that they handled it. And so I'm going to be interested to talk through those with you.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that one in a moment. The about La'an and Kirk, I like that it was La'an who they chose to be the person, and it makes sense for a character anyway, but be the person who actually just opened up and spoke normally before the song kicked in, because she told Pike already that emotions are a security risk, are a security threat. And I thought that that was, yeah, it's a security officer's way of expressing how we take risks when we open up, because if things don't go as we hope, or if we say the wrong thing to someone, there can be significant consequences for our well-being. And she could recognize that as the security officer. And she wanted to make sure that she was in control of the situation. So it was on note for her character. And again, important that they actually had that in the episode. And it wasn't 100% people singing to each other to let out things that they actually didn't want to say to the other person. So which is the storyline that you said really rubs you the wrong way?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we'll, let me, since we're talking about kind of this idea of the characters and everything, and I think in many ways, just I thought of this as, you know, they're letting go of their inhibitions of sharing this information and actually finally sharing it. And so, you know, I thought one of the best here was La'an and Kirk, because they have a very, in many ways, a very adult conversation, right? She says, hey, I like you, basically, and this is the reason why. And Kirk comes back and says, look, I recognize that there's chemistry between us, and there's something there, but I'm also in this other thing. And so I appreciate the interest, but I can't. And I think, again, it's such an adult conversation, because I think anybody who's lived long enough, this happens, right? Like, this is reality. And I actually, this storyline actually made me feel so bad for Kirk, because you realize what Carol Marcus takes away from him. And he just, in some ways, it kind of makes me frustrated with that whole storyline, because then Kirk just lets it happen, you know, and it's like, I don't know, you know, fight for your son. you know, fight for your right to be a parent. Mm-hmm. I think it's really frustrating to me that we don't actually get that.
And just for people listening who might not be connecting the dots to what you're talking about when we jump forward to the Wrath of Khan and Kirk talks to Carol about the fact that if you had told me, I would have been there. You know, I have a son who I don't even know, really. He doesn't know his father.
Well, and you saying that, this breaks canon.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't know he was having a son, at least according to the Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one more place where it doesn't necessarily fit.
We don't know. She might tell him later that, the pregnancy didn't work out or something. And she may lead him to believe that David wasn't born.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's true. Mm-hmm. That could happen. But again, you're adding another complication good reason.
Yeah.
You know, so, sure. But regardless, I think the La'an and Kirk thing was the one that they handled the best here.
Mm-hmm.
And partly just because, and again, regardless of how it actually touches canon, which thanks for bringing that up, Chris, because now you ruined it. I'm like, now all I can think about is how this breaks canon again. That actually might take points off of my rating.
Oh, no. All right. I'm responsible. For taking points off of the rating.
But the one that actually made me the most frustrated and actually kind of mirrors what actually is going to happen to Kirk
mm-hmm.
in some ways is the Spock and Chapel thing, right? Mm-hmm. They've gotten into this relationship and now Chapel just seems to be like taking it away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that it's handled here, I was actually kind of disgusted with the way that this happens,
mm-hmm.
that where there's no regard for how Spock feels in this episode. Like she just sings this song in front of the entire, you know, lounge there on the Enterprise mm-hmm. and doesn't seem to care about the fact that, you know, Spock has literally put everything he is on the line for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in some ways, this is a whole conversation you could have about, you know, changing who you are to please somebody else. Don't do that,
mm-hmm.
which Spock kind of finds here. But I was actually kind of grossed out by the way that Chapel treats Spock in this episode. It's so disrespectful.
Yeah.
It's so hurtful. And I thought it didn't show. She showed no respect for Spock
mm-hmm.
and what he's been through in this relationship. And it was not adult. It felt very childish to be mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm getting what I want. And like, I don't care if you were a part of my life, but like, whatever, peace out. I'm going to go do what I want, regardless of how it makes you feel. Like,
yeah,
I was very disappointed.
I see. Yeah, I think I read that all quite differently. I think her expression when she finishes singing at the end of that scene shows that she realizes, oh, wait, what did I say? What did I do? And that she knows that that hurt Spock and she didn't mean to do that. I think it's part of the idea, the concept of what's happening to them, which is that they suddenly break out into song and these thoughts and emotions and words mm-hmm. come pouring out of them and they can't necessarily control what they're saying. And I think inside she has really been longing to take part in some kind of fellowship. And we saw her get rejected for the Vulcan one. And this is another one that she really wanted. And she really admires Corby as a scientist. And she, because of the rejection that she had from the Vulcans, and perhaps there are others that we haven't mm-hmm. been shown, that it's sort of implied that there have been others, she has just come to assume that it's not going to happen. And so she's been moving on with her life on the Enterprise, and she got into this relationship with Spock, which she really wanted to be in, and I think still wants to be in. But also this other thing that she's been longing for has presented itself, And she's so excited that she got this. And she can't believe that she got it because she was convinced the answer would be no. Mm-hmm. And so here, because of the effects of this subspace tear, rift, fold, whatever it is, are causing her to just let this pour out. And she's not really thinking about the fact that Spock is standing there mm-hmm. watching. So I didn't really read it as being her being disrespectful to Spock. I read it more as her accidentally hurting Spock because she wasn't in control of what she was doing. And I have a feeling that this is one element that probably will be followed up on in the next episode, at least touched on. I don't think they're going to just leave it here.
No, I don't think so either. I see what you're saying, but I think the way that I'm interpreting this different than you are is that the song, because the song that we get with Una, mm-hmm. she says, like, I wouldn't normally be sharing this, but I'm sharing this. And it's what she truly feels, right? And then mm-hmm. the song after that, La'an talks about this idea that she's so readily able to share what she feels. Sure. And then, of course, La'an is singing a song by herself mm-hmm. about how she truly feels. So regardless of whether or not she wanted to hurt Spock, this is actually how she truly feels. Like, Chapel is just ready to break free. She could have just been singing Queen's, I want to break free. I want to break free. Like, that's exactly what she's saying. Like, I'm ready to have nobody hold me back. And I'm ready to basically do mm-hmm. what I want to do. And kind of, in some ways, damn the consequences of anybody around me.
Yeah.
And because that's kind of what the song says.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were to go to look at the lyrics, those are pretty much the lyrics of the song, basically.
Yeah.
And so I think that I was just frustrated mm-hmm. that it seemed like the other relationships were able to actually do something about this and talk about this mm-hmm. in a much better way. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is their way of trying to put the nail in the coffin with the Spock and mm-hmm. Chapel thing, which is what creates the rift where it's like mm-hmm. she realizes in the end she still has these feelings for him, but then he won't reciprocate then because of basically what happened and all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so maybe that's what they're going for. But I guess one of the things is here is that I feel for Spock. And the fact that somebody would completely, because I think we all have this fear, right? This is why we don't open up, mm-hmm. is that we don't want to be hurt like this.
Sure.
And she seems to, in that song, just kind of have no regard for how Spock feels until the very end when she's gotten it off her chest. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh man, that was rough.
Because I felt she's singing about her ambitions for her career and not about wanting to be free of Spock. That's how I took it. But Spock is obviously going to be collateral damage in this.
Right.
And like you said, that this might be the reason why they act the way they do towards each other in the original series, because Vulcans live a really long time. And so Vulcan cold shoulder lasts a long time.
Well, but I think that that's the thing about this where, this is where you have a conversation with somebody mm-hmm. and you say, I really want to do this for my career, but I'll be back on the Enterprise in 3. It's like, but the way the song comes off is this kind of like snarky F you. Yeah. I will do what I want to do regardless of the cost to anybody around me. Mm-hmm. There's this ultimate selfishness to that song. And I think that's what bothers me because I felt like Christine, at least as they had portrayed her. And maybe if we go back to the first season, you know, when she talks about the idea of the way she handles men and everything, mm-hmm. this should be, you know, I should have expected this.
Yeah, I think
she's always treated people as disposable.
Yeah, it is kind of on note for the character that they established in the first season.
But it felt like this was different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so,
yeah,
I guess and maybe this is what they want. I felt so much for Spock and basically him just kind of getting the smackdown from Christine in such a public and humiliating way. Like, literally, well, the whole ship kind of knows now what happened because, well, you know, 70 people saw the song and were a part of it.
Right. Yeah. I think he asks her at first if there's a reason why she didn't tell them. I think she didn't tell him yet because she wasn't sure how to break the news to him. And she knew that it was a delicate thing for their relationship. And she wanted to tell him in the right way and have the talk that you mentioned that they should have. And she says, can we talk about this later? But then he pushes for an answer, which I think ties in to some extent to the problem with the relationship, which is that exploring emotions like this is very new to Spock. And he is like the person who is in a relationship who it might be the first relationship, doesn't have experience with how to deal with situations like this, where someone who has a lot more experience in relationships might take the hint there from Christine, let's talk about this later, and accept that and then go on to the next thing that they need to do and then talk about it later, which would have avoided the whole situation in the first place. So, yeah, it just, this, the fact that this happened doesn't surprise me too much given what we've been shown of their relationship up to this point, because there has been this uneasiness where Spock is struggling, I think, a bit to understand how to have a relationship like this in the first place. But I see what you're saying, for sure. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I think the most interesting aspect of this for me was the way in which Kirk and Spock are kind of about to go through the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Chapel just kind of up and leaves Spock in a place where he thought they were in a relationship and everything was going well. And then, you know, all the stuff happens with the remembrance of their, you know, war with Klingons, and she pulls away and then just kind of leaves him high and dry for 3 months. And, you know, Kirk is about to have his girlfriend, who's pregnant with their child, basically be like, yeah, I don't really want you around with my kid because, you know, you're out being on a starship.
Boy Scout.
Yeah. And yeah, Jim Kirk is many things, but a Boy Scout is not one of them. You know, and I think in the many ways, it's just kind of a disservice to men and our feelings. Like, yeah, we have feelings too.
Yeah.
And, you know, to just treat us like we don't mean anything, especially in the life of a child, our child, you know, is kind of way harsh, man. Mm-hmm. Although, again, this is where I would say, especially with Kirk, just don't have this being a prime timeline, and you can do whatever you want with that storyline, which makes it much better than trying to retrofit it into the Wrath of Khan. But we don't have to go down that road again. Pike and Batel, though, I mean, I love that of all these relationships, you know, we see a very mature thing where, look, just tell me the truth. I can handle it, and we can work through it together.
So,
like, that was beautiful.
Do Pike and Batel, in terms of the way their relationship is portrayed, remind you a little bit of Miles and Keiko? Like, it's the only other really, truly mature, realistic relationship that we see in Star Trek?
No, because I would argue that Dax and Worf are very mature.
Oh, well, that's a good point.
In their relationship.
That one comes later,
And Miles and Keiko.
Yeah, that's
but
a good
no,
point.
I do think that there is somewhat of a similarity here of, yes, I mean, relationships take work. They take communication. Mm-hmm. They take compromise. They take sharing how you are feeling so that the other person can actually respond to the way that you're actually feeling instead of the way they might think you're feeling. I mean, again, this whole episode is about communication. And I think, you know, Pike and Batel, in the end, they become the ones beyond Laan and Kirk, which show in a truly committed relationship the way in which true communication actually leads to deeper relationship. And to me, that was actually kind of beautiful. I liked that. I thought that that worked really well. And even the fact that, you know, they're across, you know, light years, they're probably never even in the same room, the actors, right? They do a great job at bringing these scenes to life. And I thought that that was a lot of fun.
The Pike one, Anson Mount's performance in here, I think also helped sell the interpersonal dynamics and what he's feeling, because it, he did a good job of setting it up at the beginning of the episode where he's just talking to her about the vacation and he doesn't want to tell her, yeah, I really don't want to go there, but let's just kind of put a pin in it. He's kind of, Anson Mount, he's so good at acting with his face. He expresses so much, and he did that at the beginning. But when he started singing here as well, first of all the actors, I feel like he was the most uncomfortable with having to sing in the episode.
I mean, him and Mbenga, yes.
Him and Mbenga, yeah. Although I thought Mbenga was pretty good in the lines that he had for the most part. But Pike, being the captain and being the lead of the show, obviously he was going to have the spotlight on him at some point. And he did come across a little bit to me like a Saturday Night Live sketch where they're doing a musical and they're kind of making fun of musicals, whereas the others didn't come across that way. Of course, because we already know that Rebecca Romijn can sing well. We saw it in the short trek with her and Spock in the Turbo Lift. We know that Christina Chong is a singer herself.
Yes.
Of course, Carol Kane is a singer, famous for musicals. So it's no surprise that most of the cast here can sing quite well. And I think Anson Mount was probably the one that may have been the most uncomfortable with the idea of being thrown into a musical. But I think that the way that that came off actually supported the storyline of how he's trying to not hurt his girlfriend, who we find out in this episode, her first name is Marie, by being cautious about what he says and thinking about when he wants to say these things to her. And then suddenly here he's just thrust into it. And he's kind of like, why am I singing these things to you?
Right.
But it worked. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. And, you know, I think that just one more theme that I think before we talk about, you know, the musical aspect and the songs and all of that, I really appreciated this episode was so much about this idea, and Una talks about this, and it's kind of seen throughout everybody's storyline here. Do you keep your distance, or do you live in community? And do you foster those connections between all of us? And the danger, as we heard in the Uhura song, of, you know, living just by yourself, by feeling alone all the time, and the danger of not truly expressing what one's feeling, what one's experiencing, so that others can come alongside and be there for you, and realize that in doing that, you are going to have hurt, you are going to have pain, because none of us are perfect, and our relationships are going to be imperfect, but our goal is to be there for one another. You know, which is the kind of overarching goal of the Federation. And so I really loved this idea of these two things being juxtaposed between one another. And you somewhat see the way in which, because of the way that everything goes down between Spock and Chapel, Spock is going to revert to kind of becoming more closed off to most people.
Right.
And the only people that in the end, really, that are going to know him are going to be Kirk and McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be the ones that he goes camping with, that he feels comfortable with, that mm-hmm. he can have the type of conversation with, you know, where he calls James Jim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's just that whole part of the episode I really liked, and I thought it was really well done because it was one of those things where the theme is completely played out throughout the entire episode, through every storyline that we're doing, through all of the songs, and it was really well done.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the songs themselves a little bit, because one thing that also stood out to me here is that it would be easy to do a musical episode where you just have the cast sing and you kind of you come up with some numbers. But actually, they really put together a mini musical here. I felt like they did a great job of giving us different styles. You know, you've got some stuff in here that feels like it's right out of a Bernstein musical. You've got like Gilbert and Sullivan. You've got stuff that feels like it's out of Frozen. It's like a Disney movie. You've got so much variety. And all the lyrics are, as we've been talking about, very well thought out. They really mean something to the characters who are singing them, as well as to the overall story. And from start to finish in 1 hour, I felt like I really got a well-crafted, well-thought-out musical that would normally last, you know, 2.5 hours or so. So it's compressed, but it felt very tight, and I thought the music was all quite well done.
Yeah, I thought that most of the songs are good, and I thought that most of the lyrics were good. You know, I felt like, and this is probably the result of it being a TV musical,
mm-hmm.
is that I felt like the lyrics probably needed maybe one more walkthrough
mm-hmm.
And one more refinement, because there were some word choices where I was like, ooh, I feel like you kind of went with the first word that sounded like it fit, but you could have refined that in a true musical style.
But
Just
on that point, just interject real quick. I think that I noticed that as well. And I think that worked for me because they were being sort of forced to sing by this anomaly. And it was just happening in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and again, it's not a major criticism, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's a minor one, at least I have, you know, as somebody who grew up loving musicals, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, the conceit of the musical mm-hmm. is the fact that you are given the words to sing, right? The perfect
right.
song.
Right, right. Well, that's why I thought this worked, because it reinforced the idea that they weren't prepared. Unlike James Kirk, who thought that it's just something you guys all rehearsed, it's something that's just happening to them suddenly. And right. so it's like sight reading music. It's like someone sticks a sheet of music in front of you and you have to play it and you've never seen it before.
I think that the just in general too, again, the songs are good for the most part. I think the best obviously is the solo by Christina Chong, who is obviously releasing music now because mm-hmm. she is a singer as well, incredibly talented. And so I thought that that was my favorite of the episode. I did think, I will say, to me, the actual filming of the musical sequences was not always great.
Yeah.
It felt like when you're filming a musical sequence, especially one where you only have a few people involved, the camera needs to be in constant movement to kind of keep you moving with the song.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there were too many places where the camera movement isn't doing that, and therefore it's somewhat of a detriment to the musical number. I think specifically, again, with the, as much as I love the song, the Christina Chong solo there does not get the camera movement it needs to make that a truly dynamic piece mm-hmm. of musical filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed almost like they needed to find somebody who had really worked on a lot of musicals and filming them to kind of bring this episode to life. But on a whole, as TV musicals go, you know, I've seen the Scrubs musical, the episode that they did, which was funny, and others. I think that this one worked about as well as you could possibly hope, especially for it being in Star Trek.
Right. Yeah. And of course, speaking of other TV musicals, there's that great little homage here, reference to the famous Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical episode.
Yes, yes.
When they say, so what's next? More improbability? Or will we just suddenly poof into bunnies? I would prefer not to be a bunny. I doubt we will be bunnies. So the bunnies is, of course, a direct reference to the Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode. I love that they did drop that in. So, all right. Well, quick rundown the titles of the songs in this episode. Status Report. Then we get the Strange New World's main title theme with that Subspace Rhapsody version of it, which I thought was really fine. I'm glad that they did that. Connect to Your Truth. How Would That Feel? Private Conversation. Keeping Secrets. I'm Ready. I'm the X. Keep Us Connected. We Are One. And then the end credits, which is also a special version here. So that is your Star Trek musical. Now, the one thing that we obviously can't get out of this discussion without talking about, at least for a moment, Matthew, are the singing Klingons. I laughed out loud at that part. And, of course, the Klingon captain here was played by Bruce Horak, who plays Himmer.
You know what? That was like it came straight out of like Hamilton or something with right. the rap number basically they're doing. And it was hysterical with just the look and the feel of it. I like that. That was one of those moments where it's like they had truly just completely leaned into the musical idea.
Oh, yeah.
And I found it to be very funny. So I mean, that was good for a laugh right there. And I had no problems with them doing that. And so just fantastic.
Well, yeah, I loved
honestly.
It. He says that we found the source of our great dishonor. And he doesn't say like, we've been singing uncontrollably and we don't know why, but it's sort of implied that that's been happening to them and now they've found out why and they're going to destroy it.
Yes. I mean, I thought, you know, was this the way in which a great Klingon opera got written, maybe?
Could be. Could be. All right. So, Matthew, what are your final thoughts on this one and what's your rating for Subspace Rhapsody?
I think that this episode did the best it could with what it was given to work with, which is the idea that we're going to create a musical episode. It was fun, inventive. Obviously, they use it specifically on purpose to give us the movement forward and a lot of character relationships. So I think that was kind of smart. They break canon again. So good job there. And
well, what
all
great
in all,
musical
though,
doesn't break canon, Matthew?
Yeah. Well, this one did.
I mean, you know, that Les Miserables prequel, man, they just really, Javert would never do that. I'm just saying.
Yes. Yeah. Or Jean Valjean. I mean, so, but I think I'm going to give this a 3.75 out of 5. Okay. And the reason was is because
I messed up your Kirk theory. You were going to give it a 4.
It was going to be a 4, but they got a quarter of a star taken away. And it just felt like I can't give it a full 4 because, yeah, they did mess up something they didn't need to mess up.
Yeah.
And I think, and again, I'm being constructive here. All you had to say there was, I'm in a relationship with Carol Marcus. The end.
Right. Yeah.
You don't need to add the fact that he knows that he has a son
right.
on the way or a kid on the way. Yeah. And so, and I think that that still leaves Kirk in a place where he's being an honorable man. And, you know, of course, La'an being an honorable woman in this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 3.75 out of 5 musical anomalies because... It's way better than it has any right to be, in all honesty. Like, mm-hmm. this could have been an absolute train wreck, and thankfully it's not.
Yeah. No, that, yeah, I agree. Well, my final thoughts, just a bit of background, because many people may not know this about me. I mentioned earlier in our discussion that I am trained in music. I was a professional musician for years. I also spent years playing in pit orchestras for musicals. So musicals have been a huge part of my life since I was young, and music used to be my entire life and remains a big part of my life. So I was very receptive to the idea of a musical, but I was very uncertain how that was going to play in Star Trek. But in the end, for me, this episode is just like any good music. It's certainly like any good musical. You have to listen to the words because it's all in there, like we talked about earlier. And if you take a superficial view of it, you just miss the entire point of the creative work, which here is to share thoughts, experience, advice, kind of share about life. And that's what Star Trek is about. And so this does that very well. I have a feeling that there are probably a lot of people out there who are just looking at this episode on the surface and just seeing it as a musical and just hearing the music and seeing the crew sing, and it feels weird. And so they dismiss the episode. But while it might seem silly on the surface, I really think this episode is packed with the kind of character exchanges and development that have always made for the best Star Trek. So I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And this was the 892nd episode or movie of Star Trek ever released. And I feel like after 891 stories, we deserve something just very different and fine like this. And it doesn't have to fit in with everything else. It can just be there as that special moment. But on top of that, they actually made it mean something really important. So I'm actually going to give this episode 10 Sam Kirk dances.
There you go.
Did you love Sam Kirk's dancing in that scene that you otherwise didn't like? I mean, he was on fire.
There was a lot of great dancing in this episode that I was not expecting, especially even kind of at the end where Pike is still kind of dancing there mm-hmm. on the bridge, which was funny. So
it was brilliant. All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Subspace Rhapsody. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our closed group for listeners. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're not yet a member and you're joining, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. If you're already a member, of course, you know how it works. There will be a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can leave your thoughts for Matthew and me there and fellow listeners, and let's get a discussion going about Subspace Rhapsody. If you are joining, if you're looking for it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. And of course, you can send us email if you'd like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that message will mosey its way right on over to Matthew and me. And you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to just talk to the phone company about your phone bill and how disappointed you are in that extra charge before you break out into song and say something you're going to regret forever, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd, Twitter. I said Twitter already, but Vero is the other place. Matt Rushing 02. You can find me all over social media under that name. You can also find me here on the network, not singing enough, apparently. Maybe people are like, please stop singing. So I'm going to do that. Find me on the 602 Club, where we talk about all those fandoms we love outside of Star Trek. You can also find me on Literary Treks, talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We've got The Orb about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where Chris and I do that, and we're going through our 30th anniversary rewatch, 20th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Enterprise on Warp 5, and of course we've got The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard over on the Nerd Party Network. You can also find me with Drea Kaufman talking about the Harry Potter series one chapter at a time on Owl Post, and John Mills and I talk about Star Wars on Aggressive Negotiations. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out where that music in your mind is coming from, where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm just looking around the room like, what is happening? What is happening to me? When I'm not doing that, you can find me everywhere in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but you can find me on all these new platforms as well. And then here on the network, of course, Matthew, you mentioned all the shows that you and I do together. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and you can find me in many episodes in the back catalog. So check those out if you want to hear more of my thoughts on Star Trek. And if you'd like to help us keep sharing thoughts on Star Trek, keep everything here on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to get involved and how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help. So here is a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us now. And if you're not, we hope that you will help us keep Star Trek discussion going. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to saddling up with you one more time this season, next week, as those big lizards end up in our backyard.
Chris, hit it.